This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
It's Resource Centre and I'm Maya Tan. Today we launch into the final episode of our series on innovation, which we've been running every Monday with Raj Kumar from the UCSI Blue Ocean Strategy Regional Centre, talking about discoveries on their study of how Southeast Asian companies deal with innovation. We went through how important it is for companies to make innovation a strategic priority. We went through ideation strategies, how to adopt systematic processes as part of your innovation exercise, and what the returns on innovation are. Now, if you missed any of these, you can download the podcasts from bfm.my. But this week, to continue with the final part of the series, is Luciano Pezzotta, Managing Partner of ECSI Consulting of Singapore. Now, ECSI Consulting is part of the ECSI Group, which includes the European Centre for Strategic Innovation, or ECSI. So Luciano is an innovation expert with over 15 years of strategy and innovation consulting experience across Europe and the Asia Pacific in industries such as energy, FMCG, banking, life sciences, and media. Welcome, Luciano.
Good afternoon.
So today, we're going to go over one of the most interesting topics when it comes to innovation, the hidden enemies. Luciano, can you give us an idea of what these hidden enemies of innovation are?
Sure. Through our research, we have found out that not only innovation initiatives are often hindered by organizational blockers, but that such inhibitors most often originate from management techniques companies diligently apply with their best intentions. In fact, such enemies or blockers do not originate from external conditions, but are actually created by the company themselves. Even more interesting, not only poorly run businesses, but even well-managed companies using modern management practices can unconsciously create environments which are not conducive to innovation. That's why we call the resulting framework the hidden enemies of innovation.
I see. So why does this happen? I mean, you know, in today's business environment, innovation is very much in the spotlight. So how is it possible that we're using management methods that hinder innovation?
You know, in the last 20 years, the business environment has changed faster than mainstream management methodologies. In fact, most management techniques and the related processes, such as resource allocation, performance management, organizational design, and so on, were conceived a few decades ago, when the environment was steady and efficiency and control were the management priorities. On the contrary, in the last decade, due to a number of factors, including globalization and the internet, the environment has changed radically, and adaptability, innovation, transformation have become the imperative. Unfortunately, due to the tremendous speed of change, the underlying management processes taught at business schools haven't changed yet.
I see. So it's about disruption of the business environment and the fact that our processes are not changing fast enough. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly the point.
Okay, so can you tell us more about the nature of these innovation blockers or give us some examples?
Yeah, the innovation enemies can be grouped in four clusters, and each of them is structured in a number of detailed blockers, but I will try to give you a sense of the nature.
Okay, and number one?
The first one is what we call the structuralist view of strategy. Because often companies consider their environment, their market space, their customers, and business boundaries as defined. And as a consequence, competition is a head-to-head battle for a known limited demand constituted by existing customers. The point is that existing customers do not always know what they want or they need. And I like to recall one of the most famous quotes from Steve Jobs that used to say, "It isn't the customer's job to know what they want."
Right.
And this tendency can be emphasized by an excessive use of segmentation of known and existing markets, or extensive benchmarking used as an analytical tool to close the gap versus competitors. But by offering more of the non-performance attributes, segmentation and benchmarking tend to generate emulation and therefore harm innovation.
Right, so they're just copying. So what you're saying here is that if you only use what is known about the target market, the information that's out there, then you stop being innovative. You're just, you know, the most that you can do is gain a one-up over your competitor, but you're not creating new services and products or new innovative services and products. And even if you ask the customer what they want, it's still not enough.
You're absolutely right.
Okay, so how can companies get around this?
Actually, they should continuously challenge what they've been doing in the past. Mm-hmm. And there are a number of techniques. I'm very passionate about Blue Ocean Strategy, which is a very effective strategic insight methodology. And mm-hmm. they need basically to visualize and involve their teams in the creating alignment on what they've been doing in the past in order to challenge it and move forward.
Right. Okay. You know, I spoke with Charles Leadbeater. He's the author of the book Mass Innovation, Not Mass Production. And one of his theories is that companies need to get out of the building and to see how their customers live and work and how they use products in order to see where the pain is and what their hot buttons are and how a product can provide a solution. Do you agree with this recommendation?
Absolutely. The statement you just shared is based on a couple of assumptions that are very key in our approach at ECSI Consulting. We truly believe that we need to start from customers if we want to innovate. And second, it's very important to give everybody in the organization a chance to be involved in this exercise.
Mm. So it's not just, you know, looking at market research. It's really going out there, talking to the customers and getting the raw information from them, right?
In Absolutely.
Order to innovate. Okay, so what would the second cluster of hidden enemies be?
The second cluster relates to the resource allocation processes. To mention just the most frequent blocker in this group, companies typically use quantitative processes to select investments to fund. Mm. Usually, only investments with a quantifiable return, be it the discounted cash flow, the internal rate of return, or the net present value, can be approved. The risk is that markets that we don't know cannot be quantified and, as a consequence, don't pass the cut.
Okay, but some of these risk markets could potentially bring in a lot of money, right? It's just that we don't know how to forecast the earnings. Is that what you're saying?
Exactly. Let me share a story set in the 70s when the AT&T telco group, this American giant, asked one of the most respected research companies what would be the size of the mobile phones market in year 2000. Mm-hmm. That was a scenario far in the future and obviously difficult to assess.
Right.
With this research company did was to stretch into the future the market condition of those days when mobile phones were nearly as big as suitcases and so expensive that only prime ministers and CEOs of big corporations could afford. And according to the analysis, the market estimate in year 2000 was that few thousand devices would be sold globally. Instead, we all know that thanks to technological change, in year 2000, few thousand handphones were sold in a matter of seconds.
Okay, so I guess the moral of the story is when you're dealing with the unknown, maybe avoid forecasting 30 years and maybe stick to 5 to 10 years. But in terms of today, how can we make the money people happy?
Actually, reducing the time frame of the estimate can be an approach, or a different approach can be include qualitative judgment into our evaluations, which means eventually use different criteria. So my previous point was basically that using quantitative criteria to assess radically new ideas might not be the best option.
Okay. Any idea of what are some of these qualitative judgments? And is it all still based on measurement?
Is based on measurement, eventually, of mega trends that are moving in a given clear direction.
Okay.
If you cannot really quantify the expected return of your new idea, but you see that it's very consistent with the number of signals that you get from the economic environment, you might decide that that is the right direction, although you're not really sure when the market is going to get to the size of significant profitability.
Okay, all right. I've been speaking with Luciano Pezzotta, Managing Partner of ECSI Consulting in Singapore, and we're talking about the hidden enemies that companies face in innovation. We've covered two blockers to innovation, and in a bit we're going to look at a couple more and also how these can be tackled. This is Resource Center on Enterprise, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
This is Resource Center and I'm Maya Tan. If you've just tuned in, I've been speaking to Luciano Pezzotta, Managing Partner of ECSI Consulting in Singapore, and we're talking about the hidden enemies that companies face in innovation. So far, we've covered structuralist views, just working on existing information on target customers, which is not enough. And we've talked about how only projects with low risks and high returns receive funding and how to get around that problem. So, Luciano, what would the third block blocker be?
The third group of blockers is what we call the internally oriented organizations. These blockers harm innovation when there is difficult coordination and cooperation across divisions and functions that become silos and are not willing to cooperate on projects that fall across their organizational boundaries.
Ah, so this would be about internal barriers and politicking within a company.
Exactly.
Okay. I also remember talking to Raj about how internal crowdsourcing is one technique which is underutilized, and it's commonly top-tier management that believe they are the only ones who should be doing the ideation, and there's not a lot of sharing between the different departments. Do you have a case study to share?
Yes, absolutely. Let me mention the case of Nespresso. I guess it's a case that is very easy to relate to. Nespresso is basically this coffee system produced by Nestle, consisting in specially designed coffee machines and individually portioned aluminium capsules containing high-quality coffee.
Mm-hmm.
Nespresso is now very popular, and it is an important product for Nestle as well. Can you guess when was it developed by Nestle?
Year 2000?
Not at all. It was developed in 1974, exactly 40 years ago, yes. However, it initially went through very difficult times as none of the existing divisions was willing to take ownership of the project, as it didn't fit with the existing organizational structure and business units.
I see.
Only in 1989, after 15 years, Nestlé realized Nespresso would never take off due to the lack of support by existing business units, and decided to set up a dedicated project team under the direct supervision of the top management of the company.
Right.
Now Nespresso is present in more than 50 countries, has a global market share of over 21% in its segment, and has more than 7,000 employees worldwide.
Right. So, you know, in terms of this sort of silo situation, are there any strategies for avoiding this blocker?
Yes, actually, we can look at the organization. We can create systematic ways for divisions to cooperate. We can actually review our KPIs to make sure cooperation is one of the key objectives working on a daily basis. And actually, in some cases, we may consider to set up an innovation unit at corporate level, because actually all these blockers tend to play an important role in the very early phase of ideation, when ideas are not really politically very strong yet, when the benefit for the organization of those ideas is not really clear yet.
Right.
And so basically an organizational unit that nurtures those ideas until they're strong enough to be passed to some division could be a very effective way to deal with it.
So would the innovation unit be represented by people from the different divisions and different tiers of management?
Actually, what we found in our research is that different organizations have designed and created effective innovation units in different ways. But in reality, all of them tend to have an innovation unit position at corporate level with people assigned to work in this unit on a full-time basis. And then the ideas, when they're solid enough, are passed to the division for execution, something they're very good at.
Okay. And now on to the last hidden enemy.
Yes, the last hidden enemy is what we call the incumbent culture. And it deals with a number of implications of the way our brain works that may create resistance to change and innovation. Some examples include the comfort zone, which is a behavioral state within which an individual operates in an anxiety-neutral condition without a sense of risk, thus creating resistance to change that can push organizations to rebel against innovation, especially when they're first conceived. Or another example is the existence of long-held biases regarding the boundaries of the market, the target customers, the type of distribution channels, and the marketing approach. Or one last example is what we call the capability trap, because people have the natural tendency to replicate what they already know and master, and indirectly push back on innovations.
So do you think BlackBerry would be a victim of this hidden enemy? You know, it's lost a lot of market share in recent years.
I'm afraid I might be one of the victims of this group of blockers, because unfortunately it seems, according to our research, that the most successful companies are the ones that over time create a very strong legacy and find very difficult to challenge their existing culture.
How should companies deal with this situation?
First of all, as in the case of the other blockers, it's very important to be aware of their possible existence and eventually relevance into the organizations. And eventually, once you are clear on the existence of cultural issues, you need to define clear actions to slowly move your organization toward a more innovative culture. We all know that culture is one of the most difficult things to change, but we also see cases that have been successfully in doing that.
Mm-hmm. So would they have to seek, you know, consultants to come in and sort of implement some sort of strategy to educate and nurture the change in culture?
Actually, changing the culture is something that requires, first of all, commitment from the top. Mm-hmm. Then obviously consultants can help in designing and executing in a short time frame systematic plans and coherent plans to execute those type of cultural changes that require strong commitment and a lot of effort through the organization.
Right, okay. Yeah, if there's no commitment from the top, there will be nothing from the bottom. So just to summarize, how can companies tackle the blockers?
Yeah, to boost the innovation capabilities before creating incentives and processes that foster innovation culture, company should make sure they have identified and mitigated the hidden enemies of innovation. Otherwise, they may end up investing managerial and financial resources with the best intentions, only to face disappointing returns and the dilemma of what went wrong. So more in detail, as I mentioned, the first step is in creating the awareness of the possible existence of the hidden enemies. Mm-hmm. And to this end, we have an assessment tool that can be used to diagnose what blockers and to what extent are actually harming the organization's innovation efforts. Then the organization must act on the opportunity and mitigate the enemies.
Right. Can you sort of tell us a little bit more about this assessment tool?
Yes, actually it's an assessment tool that details all the blockers within a cluster and ask participants to rate the relevance. What we normally do, we involve a group of participants from this organization and we organize them in different teams. We mm-hmm. ask them to rate the blockers through questions that are very intuitive, and then what we do to make sure their assessment is quite solid, we analyze if there is correlation between the answers. When we find a strong correlation between the answers in different groups, it means there is a common perception about the existence of these blockers.
Okay. And we were talking about it outside, and you said that there was one method, a very effective method, called the Dragon's Den.
Yeah, absolutely. The Dragon's Den is one of the possible solutions that organization may decide to implement in order to strengthen and make sure the resource allocation process is not killing great innovation opportunities. Mm-hmm. And basically, the Dragon's Den is designed as a session where employees at any level are given the few minutes to pitch their ideas to a panel of senior managers.
Okay, so this is a little bit like a role-playing game. You know, you enter the Dragon's Den, and if you survive, you will marry the princess and rule the kingdom.
Yeah, you can say so, actually, in a way. But in reality, the outcome is more related to practical outcomes than maybe fantasy dreams or these fairy tales. Basically, the objective is not to be the winner or marry the princess, but basically to get your idea to be selected in order to receive seed funding for further development. Mm-hmm. I'm sure you discussed with Raj that an effective innovation management process requires not only ideation, but mm-hmm. also development.
Right.
And to this end, the logic is that ideas that may be rejected if submitted through the traditional highly quantitative resource allocation processes may instead be approved when the qualitative judgment of the senior management sees the potential of a good idea.
Right, so it's just an opportunity for senior management to see the potential that may be rejected by, say, the finance department.
Exactly.
Right, so is there a company that we know that makes use of this process?
Yes, absolutely. There are plenty of them. But to mention just one that I'm sure everybody knows, we can share about Facebook, which holds these sessions on a regular basis. Mm. And during the sessions, even summer interns can present their ideas to founder, Mr. Mark Zuckerberg. And even timeline, the Facebook redesign homepage that each user has on its homepage was proposed and approved through this process.
I see. I also read an article on Fast Company about Disney's Imagineers, and this would be a specialized innovation unit, as you mentioned. And this is the team that comes up with the ideas for Disney's theme parks, amongst other things. And I think they completely put their success down to what your survey has proven. For example, they use systematic processes, including the possibility that things will not work and they may have to deal with panic attacks. And number two, they also use internal crowdsourcing like Facebook. And number three, they break down the internal silos by getting people from opposing departments to work next to each other. For example, getting the poets to work together with the accountants in the same team. So I think they're one of the best case studies in terms of innovation. Do you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, for a company with such legacy, Disney's been able to move from cartoons to theme parks, to cruise ships, to hotels, to water parks, something which is absolutely not obvious. And what I really appreciate in this article is that they clearly expect ideas to come from anywhere, which is one of the things we truly preach to organizations that won't become more innovative. And second, also, I really appreciate that they assemble eclectic teams where they take individuals from very different backgrounds and they put them together in innovation teams. And this is something we always recommend in our innovation projects.
Right, right. And it's also not like they just sit down and wait for the ideas to come. They actually have a process in place to sort of mine these ideas from the employees and get the ideas going.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Unfortunately, there is a misconception in the market that innovation and good ideas can be pursued simply by sitting together and doing what is called as brainstorming. But very often I find an organization that don't even brainstorm, because brainstorming in theory has a structured process in order to maximize its outcome. And there are other ideation methodologies, and they are very important to make sure we don't just sit down and have a nice chat, but we hold productive creativity sessions.
Right, and that the ideas can actually be executed and actually bring returns to the company, right?
Yes.
So is there anything you'd like to say to sort of sum up the whole innovation series?
Yes, let me share a couple of principles. The first one is that chances to come up with good ideas are higher if we involve everybody in the organization in the exercise. But we need proper processes in place, or our innovation efforts may end up in what we call the creative chaos, where everybody generates creative ideas, but they are not really captured and turned into successful opportunities.
Okay.
And the second one is that in the innovation process, ideation is obviously key, but we need to place equal emphasis on development to validate and fine-tune those ideas before we execute them. Otherwise, we may implement ideas that are very creative, but not really ready to be launched into the market and may result in failures and lost opportunities.
Okay, and that concludes our series of innovation with UCSI Blue Ocean Strategy and ECSI Consulting, a member of the European Centre for Strategic Innovation Group. I've just been speaking to Luciano Pezzotta, Managing Partner of ECSI Consulting Singapore. Thank you, Luciano.
Thanks to you for having me.
No problem at all. This is Resource Centre and I'm Maya Tan, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.